and welcome to Fruits of the Spirit, a bi-weekly podcast celebrating and sharing the faith journeys of queer and trans people of color. My name is Enrique Cintron, and I am your host. And I am currently recording this from the Mile High City in Colorado. I am very much enjoying some time away with my partner. It's been gorgeous here in Colorado, although at the same time, it was 70 degrees yesterday, and today it is now 30 degrees, and we got at least 3 inches of snow last night, so I don't know how to feel about that. If you are a Christian, I hope that you are enjoying the lead up to Easter that we call Holy Week. I hope that it's been a very poignant and very powerful Lent for you all. I know that some of you have been engaging with the Lent devotional that my partner and I wrote called To Build and to Plant. It's been so wonderful to see some kind of like some cross-pollination, we could say, between people who listen to the podcast and folks who have been engaging with this devotional. So thank you so much if you have shared it, and I hope that it has brought some really good insights and some good meditation during this Lenten season for you. I am incredibly excited to share this conversation with you this week with my friend Maria Facuri. Maria and I met at a queer Christian conference a couple years ago, and I just love her so much. She is just one of the most joyful people that I know. She's doing really great work in becoming a counselor and helping folks with religious trauma. And she's just a really wonderful person. I'm so glad to bring this conversation to you all. So let me tell you a little bit about her. Maria identifies as gay as heck and uses she, her pronouns. She's a proud Palestinian raised in the Orthodox Church, but now attends what she calls her beautiful, progressive, LGBTQ+ affirming church, St. Albans, which she is grateful to call her spiritual home. Maria is a student in psychotherapy, currently completing her master's in counseling and spirituality at St. Paul's University in Ottawa, Ontario. I hope you enjoy this week's episode. Let's get into it. Let's do you want to start with like a little prayer to open our conversation? I can offer one, or if you want to offer one.
Sure, I'd love to hear you offer one.
Sure. Okay. Beloved God, thank you for this time of fellowship with two of your queer children. Thank you for this conversation that we're about to have. May your Holy Spirit move through us and allow this time of sacred story sharing to be uplifting and healing in whatever ways it needs to be, and to have it benefit more of your queer and trans children of color. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen.
Amen.
So, what have you been up to recently, and how have you been navigating this whole pandemic time?
Oh boy. Well, I mean, I think my number one answer to this question is always that I've just been cooking a lot.
That's great.
Yes. I love to eat. Have you ever heard that thing that's like, do you eat to live or live to eat?
Yes.
I live to eat. So.
So do I, honestly. I fucking love to eat.
Right?
I love to cook and eat.
Yes, yes. So I've just been exploring my love of food and seeing how like broad I can make my repertoire of things I can make in my apartment on my dinky stove.
Yes. Have you ventured into sourdough making? Because I feel like everybody's done that at this point, except for me. But
oh my goodness, let me tell you this story. So
please.
my roommate comes upstairs like maybe a month ago, and she will up to our apartment. She says, "Hey, the neighbors offered us sourdough starter." I told them yes because I figured you would want it, and I was like, "Yeah, hell yeah, let's do it." So we like receive this like sourdough starter, and she gives us these like very specific instructions. And it sat in the fridge and I forgot to feed it. So I think it died.
Oh no.
So I killed sourdough starter.
I mean, you know, may she rest in peace.
May she rest in peace. She had so much potential that was not explored.
Yeah. You know, it's like, I think during, you know, this whole time, it's like so many of us are just like struggling to maintain our own selves, let alone like houseplants and sourdough starter. So
yes. See, and I've mastered the plant thing. I thought, okay, whoa, I need to knock on some wood. I am doing okay at the plant thing, but now you have like a plant that's in the fridge and it's just a bit much for me. I'll buy my friend. Thank you.
That's so real. That's so real. Well, so tell me about growing up Palestinian and Orthodox, and how your queerness has, you know, influenced or informed those experiences.
Yeah, that's such a great question. It's interesting because I think that growing up, Orthodoxy is very cultural.
Mm.
You know, like a lot of people, when they hear Orthodox, they go, oh, Greek Orthodox, because those two things have been paired, you know, so repeatedly in like the public consciousness. So I grew up what they call Antiochian Orthodox, which is like Greek Orthodox, but Arab, essentially. And so a lot of like my family life and my cultural life was wrapped up in the church. Our church was half English and half Arabic, and they rotate back and forth every other line. And so the kind of like cultural expectations, I guess, of like the kid, the child of an immigrant are wrapped up in like your kind of your church life and how good you are at doing church. But I was pretty good at doing church. So I think I met those expectations for a long time.
Yeah.
I love church. I loved being surrounded by people of my culture, which is how it was at my church growing up. Brain fart as well. Let me think. what I will say about being Palestinian actually and Orthodox is that, so on my mom's side, her mother, her last name is Huri, which means priest, because her dad was a priest in Jerusalem, actually in the church, right next door to the Church of the Holy Sepulchre.
Wow.
Yes, and his dad and his dad and his dad and his dad for like 25 generations.
Oh my gosh, wow.
Yes, so Orthodoxy is like deep in our ancestry, but also like as Palestinians, you know? Yeah. And so there is kind of this tension for me of this like land that we lost, being tied up in our faith in a way.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think of how I can articulate this in a smart way. I guess it's, you know what it is it's this thing where I was raised Orthodox and I loved it, but I couldn't stay.
Mm.
You know, I couldn't stay because I was queer. And I think that a lot of times when we talk in the queer community about, oh, you should just leave your non-affirming church. And yeah, that's a nice sentiment. And I would definitely like to, but I think that people forget that our churches often, as people of color, are also these like cultural hubs and these places where we honor our ancestry. And so part of like the pain that came with leaving my church, St. Elias, and like the kind of Orthodox world was also like, I am leaving kind of behind this place where I connect with this cultural ancestry. And in like on both sides of my family, both my dad's side and my mom's side, with all of our cousins, I am like the religious cousin. You know, like I am the one that like kind of fulfilled that like Orthodox Orthodox standard. Not that anyone imposed on me, but I think I was kind of carrying that torch, you know?
Yeah.
So leaving and thinking about those 25 generations of Palestinian people that you know, held their faith historically in our land, and then leaving. You know, there's a tension there. So it's challenging in that sense of now I go to a church that prays in English and only in English. Sometimes in French because we're Canadian, but there's that grief there of missing that part of myself that was celebrated in one space, but can't be celebrated in another space, if that makes sense.
Yeah. I mean, so for me, I resonate so much with, you know, what you were saying about, like, it's very easy for folks to be like, oh, just leave, right? I hear that. I mean, like, not just among, like, other queer Christians, right? But, like, folks in the LGBT community at large who are not religious or spiritual, who are just like, oh, just leave, right? Mm-hmm. Like, why do you need God? Why do you need, you know, faith community? But I mean, you know, it's like you were saying, like, it's not just a connection to the divine. It's also these cultural and family histories for us as queer and trans people of color that are also being, you know, kind of caught up in all of this. You know, like for me with Catholicism, like I grew up going to this very small Catholic parish here in Philadelphia that for the longest time was the only Spanish-speaking parish in the entire city, right?
Right.
And it was a huge cultural institution, not just for my family, but like for the entire like Latinx community in Philadelphia. Because it emerged during this time where there was nothing else, you know? And like, I think in many ways too, like Catholicism is also very much tied to like my Latinx identity. And so like, that's also something that, you know, for me, I've been struggling to find within the Episcopal Church, you know? So I also like, I resonate a lot with that. Well, because if I'm remembering correctly, you're going to an Anglican church now, is that?
That's right, yeah.
Okay. Aside from the language and the cultural piece, like, how are you finding, like, being in an Anglican space now?
It's interesting. At first, it was definitely a really big adjustment. There was two sides of me. One part of me felt this deep, deep relief, like just the deepest relief. And I remember So the decision that I made was, remember when we thought like 2020 was going to be like this like brave new start or something?
Oh God.
New decade. There was all these, like, we all had these expectations that it meant something great. And I was turning 25 in 2020 and I said, what a great and momentous time to change my life. I've been anticipating this shift from my Orthodox church to a new church. You know, I'm halfway through my 20s, it's going to be a new decade. And so I made this decision that once 2020 hit, I would go to the new church. Like I would just use that kind of timestamp for a nice, pretty narrative. And so the first Sunday of 2020, I went to my new church, my church now, St. Albans. And I sat in the pews during that service and I just wept. And it was a feeling I couldn't really put into words, but the relief of finally kind of having that like exodus from so much pressure. And yes, in like a big way, but also in these little ways of, I think a lot about like queer body language, you know? So my old church, for example, this is just the smallest thing, but you know, you have to sit with your legs like put together, you know, and I have like big dyke energy and I want to sit with my like legs wide open, you know. But you can in that space, because people are kind of looking at you and they're making these assessments of, you know, your appropriateness and your femininity, and they're making assessments on your devoutness based on your body language. And it's, and now finally here I am in this space where my legs can be wide open and that's embraced, you know.
yes.
And so, yeah, there's stuff like that, or just having them, St. Alice is really attentive to gender language.
Mm, yeah.
You know, God is he and she and they and them, you know, mm-hmm. and careful about, you know, like colonialist language and not just using terms like Lord, but, you know, using terms like lover. And they are so attentive and so intentional. And it was just the most beautiful and like validating thing to see and to be among people who value those things.
Mm. Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, like for me, that's something that I really like deeply appreciate about the Anglican tradition. And I know that like some Episcopalians here in the States like don't like to identify as Anglican because there's baggage around that term, but like, you know, it is, we are part of that Anglican communion, but you know, for me, like I really just like love the like incarnational theology that's so like deeply part of this tradition, and understanding mm-hmm. that like, you know, God entered into our experience, and so through Jesus Christ, and like, you know, God also transcends all of these categories of gender and all these things, and so like, you know, in seeing people with different gender identities, that also tells us about God too, right? And that it has to like reflect in the language we use in worship, that God is beyond this category of male.
Yes.
You know?
Yes. It reminds me of this this verse from the Psalms that I read this, and I can't take credit for this kind of this thought because I read it in an article by some queer Christian years ago. But it said, you know, like, how great are your works, O Lord, you have made all things in wisdom.
Mm.
And considering being in a church space that sees like diverse gender identities and says, hey, there's wisdom in everything that God created.
Mm.
Yeah. And each of these expressions of life has wisdom and teaches us something about God. It's so beautiful. And these non-affirming spaces, I find they're missing out.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. Like, I was talking to a friend of mine a little while ago, my friend Hazel, who I interviewed for the podcast, and we were talking about, you know, like, if we really believe that God is, like, omnipotent and, you know, transcendent and, like, all of these, like, big concepts that we will never understand, right? Like, if we actually believe all of that about God, like, why do we still put God into these categories in the ways that, like, you know, some of these traditions do, being like, well, yeah, God is all powerful, but God has to be a man,
right?
God just doesn't make sense otherwise.
It doesn't. You know, can I tell you a very niche Orthodox reference?
Please, yeah.
And this is also not my thought. I can't remember this person's name at the moment, but I wish that I could.
No worries.
But it someone in the kind of queer Orthodox community wrote this blog post called More Spacious Than the Heavens.
Mm.
And that title is in reference to this icon of the Virgin Mary,
mm-hmm.
or in Orthodoxy, we say the Theotokos. And this icon, it usually in Orthodox churches, it sits right above the altar, and it's this like huge, beautiful icon of the Virgin Mary holding Jesus. And a lot of these icons have this inscription that says more spacious than the heavens.
Mm.
And the theology there is that like if the Virgin Mary could contain in her womb like God, who is greater than everything and infinite, if she has the space for that within her, then she is more spacious than the heavens.
Mm. Yeah.
And the thought Ooh. Of yeah let that breathe. And so this person who was writing this blog post said, how can a faith that can articulate something so powerful, more spacious than the heavens, still yet not have space for me?
Wow. That's, I mean, that's it right there, right? Like, oh,
yeah.
That's, yeah. Sometimes, you know, like I hear things like that and I'm like, I don't even need to respond to that. That statement can just stand on its own. I don't need to add anything to that.
Yeah.
Hey friends, I hope you're enjoying today's episode. I just wanted to take some time to ask for your support. I love doing this podcast. It brings me so much joy to be able to bring these conversations to you all and show the world that queer and trans people of color are flourishing and thriving, not just in our personal lives or our professional lives, but also in our spiritual lives, our walks with God. I really want to do this work for a long time, and in order to make it sustainable, I'm going to need your help. Here are some ways that you can do that. I have a Patreon page. It's patreon.com/themologian. This Patreon supports not only Fruits of the Spirit, but my other work, like the devotionals that I'm writing and videos that I'm making for a upcoming YouTube channel. If you become a patron, you get plenty of perks, including bonus episodes of Fruits of the Spirit, which include extra content from each episode on the main feed, as well as meditations and sermons that I've written. If you want some more Fruits of the Spirit in your life, you have to check out patreon.com/themologian. Over on our anchor page, you can also click the listener support button and sign up to give monthly. You can give $1, $5, or $10 a month. All donations directly support the podcast. Go to anchor.fm/FOTS podcast, that's FOTS podcast, and check that out. Finally, if you can't donate right now, you can still help by spreading the word. Please share us with as many folks as you know. Tell your friends, families, pastors, even the church ladies at coffee hour. Every share counts. Thanks so much for being a faithful listener. On with the show. How do you, you know, kind of like with navigating being, you know, now in a different faith community, are there ways that you try to maintain, you know, connection to, you know, to Orthodoxy, to your Palestinian culture? Like how do you manage that?
That's so interesting. And that's still a big journey for me. I find, so when I left St. Elias, there were so many things that, so many kind of like Orthodox cultural practices that I had to renegotiate my relationship with. So for example, like doing the sign of the cross, for maybe the first month after I left, I didn't do it because it was so reminiscent to me of being in this space where I felt so much pressure to be obedient and to follow kind of the expectations. And I didn't do it for a while when I prayed. And then over time, I felt this kind of need to come back to it and do the sign of the cross in my life, because I've been doing the sign of the cross since I was like 4 years old and my grandmother taught it to me. It's so deep within me. And so now I do that. Nobody else at my current church does the sign of the cross, but it's something that I have to carry because it's important to me. But it's interesting. Mm-hmm. Like another one is Easter, for example. Orthodox folks tend to celebrate Easter the week after. I have a friend of mine who she isn't religious, but she used to tell me in high school, she's like, it's like you're like late to the punchline. Like you're the last one to get the joke. And that was something interesting to navigate this past year as well, which is, which Easter am I celebrating, and do I feel emotionally ready to celebrate the second, well, the Orthodox Easter that I celebrated all my life? And sometimes I think COVID kind of gave me like a little bit of a cop out on making this decision because I couldn't go to the service, so I didn't have to make these decisions. But as the time came, so we celebrated, you know, kind of the Western calendar Easter, and I celebrated it with my beautiful new community, and it was so lovely, even in the lockdown, the way that we celebrated together. And then I knew, you know, the following week was Orthodox Easter, Pascha, we say in Orthodoxy. And how do I feel about it? And I thought that I would feel all of these angry, intense feelings. And when it came, I said, oh, this is mine. This is still mine. And I wanted to celebrate it. And I did, sitting with my dad, watching it on the TV through the HDMI table. Because at the end of the day, it's like Orthodoxy is kind of, I always say, kind of like my first language, my first faith language. You know, and even if I don't necessarily live in that land anymore, it's always a part of me, you know?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Do you know the poet Naira Wahid?
Yeah.
Naira Wahid has this poem that really encapsulates this for me. Maybe I'll find it. T. Naira Wahid. It's about her relationship to Islam. I'll read it if that's okay.
Yeah.
Why not? Here we are. So she goes, Islam is still in my life. We are old soulmates who could not work out the knots against skin, who could not believe in each other while believing in ourselves, who could not make each other happy without making each other a sadness, who were born to each other and never fell in love, but we still sip tea, share our hands, touch hearts every now and then.
I really don't even need to say anything to that. Like, it stands on its own. That's so beautiful. I resonate with that so much. You know, in my own spiritual journey, I'm like having to you know, kind of navigate existing in this like Roman Catholic context of my upbringing and in this Episcopal Anglican, you know, home that I'm now a part of. And yeah, it's Catholicism, like, you know, kind of like you said, like that first language, right? For me, I really appreciated that metaphor. What is your, so in your bio, you describe yourself as gay as heck. What is your favorite thing about, you know, being gay, being queer, like, you know, what's your favorite thing about it?
Oh, shucks. Let me, I think, honestly, it's that once I was, I mean, mind you, this was like 10 years of self-work and working through shit, and I'm still working through shit because that's how it goes. But once I was able to feel comfortable and happy with who I was as a queer person, I was like, holy shit, dude, I'm free. I'm free. Like, there, sometimes I feel bad for like cishet people because they they have to they feel this like need to live in these boxes and fulfill these timelines, and I've already disappointed everybody. I mean, not really, but you know, I've already kind of announced that I am this thing that people did not expect or want or ask for, and so now I can do anything, I can be anything, I can set my own terms and live in ways that feel meaningful to me.
Absolutely.
I love that. So I'm what I love most about being gay as heck is that like I don't have to like really give a shit about how somebody else defines what my life should be, because I love my own decisions and I set my own terms, you know?
Yeah, I mean, and there's just so much, like you said, freedom in that, and being able to just like live life on your own terms and to really think about this. Actually, it reminds me of Hushin Vuong, who's a writer and a poet. Recently, like, I saw this quote from him where he was talking about how, you know, queer people think of queerness as deprivation, right? Like, you don't have access to all these different things, but in actuality, like, we are constantly thinking of alternatives and thinking about different ways to do things. And, you know, he asks the question, you know, is this enough for me, right? To be able to look at these different ways that, like, and expectations of, like, that cishet society puts on us, and, like, you know, like, gives us that freedom to, like, look at that and be like, do I really want that? Like, do I really need that? Is that actually going to be enough for me? I don't think so. You know,
that is so real.
Yeah,
that is so real. It makes me think a lot about, and mind you, I say this from a big position of privilege, because my family, for an Arab family, did very well with my coming out. They surprised me all the time. But I think a lot about the queer history of chosen family.
Yeah.
And how beautiful that is, that we have said that love, like committed, devoted, familial love, doesn't have to belong in any kind of specific configuration.
Absolutely.
And we can choose for ourselves who we call family. And it's beautiful. Yeah. What an expansive and beautiful definition of love. And it's profoundly Christian if you think about it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, you know, being able to welcome people from all different, you know, life experiences into one big family. You know, I think that's very much what Jesus was getting at. Not even getting at, like, that's what Jesus did.
Yeah. Yeah.
Tell me, so you're going to counseling. How's that journey been for you, and what inspired you to take that path?
Oh gosh, I am having the time of my life in therapy school. Therapy school is the best.
Good.
Thanks. I always wanted to be a therapist since I was like a little wee kid. I don't know why. I feel so strongly, you know that girl in the Mean Girls who has a lot of feelings.
Yes.
I am that bitch. So I've always been drawn to this as what I wanted to do. And originally I wanted to be a clinical psychologist, and I was kind of going down that route academically. And it wasn't really going in my favor, because anyone who applies to a clinical psych PhD program will tell you that it's highly competitive. And it wasn't really going my way. But you know, somehow it didn't seem to bother me that it wasn't going my way. And there was a part of me that kind of felt the spirit of, like, God's spirit being like, you know, let's tilt you a little bit to the left, because this is where I think you're going. Mm-hmm. And this other program opportunity popped up, which is a program called a Master's in Counseling and Spirituality at my now school, St. Paul's. Mm. And it's a psychotherapist training program, which trains psychotherapists to be great therapists, but also to be competent to work with people of faith.
That's great.
And yeah. And I was like, oh geez, this is my brand.
Absolutely.
This is my brand. And I love it, and it's really what I want to do, because when I was working through what it was to be queer and Christian, and I did actually eventually seek a queer Christian therapist, but there's such a shortage of that.
Yeah.
And I think the wider kind of mental health community, like, doesn't really know about us, like, this pocket of people that exists that are trying to do, like, wear a lot of hats.
Yeah.
And embrace a lot of kind of allegedly opposing identities. And yeah, I just feel such a strong call to walk with queer folks as they navigate how to be everything that they feel called to be. And this program is really giving me that training, and I'm so stoked.
Awesome.
Thanks.
See, this is why I need to have a second cup of coffee in the day.
I've had 4 or 5 coffees today.
Amazing. I've been slowly decreasing my caffeine intake because I have insomnia. So I'm like trying to I'm literally throwing all of the things against the wall and being like, let's drink more water. Let's stop drinking as much coffee. Let's go to bed by 9 p.m. You know, like just trying to do all the things and nothing is working.
Nothing is working. I am also battling the insomnia in these days, and I have become wicked good at Sudoku because that is my like go-to activity when I'm not sleeping.
I see my coping mechanism has become, I usually like, I now wake up at like 5 a.m., which is ridiculous. Because I just can't sleep anymore. So I just like, I get my day started and it's, I end up like, you know, just reading and having my like little cup of coffee and doing morning prayer. And it's actually like a nice little like contemplative moment for my day.
Mm-hmm.
A nice way to start off instead of just like scrolling through Facebook as soon as I wake up.
Yes. No, that's so beautiful. I literally this morning rolled out about at 5:30. I was like, well, my body won't do it anymore. And yeah. I got up and I went to my kitchen and I roasted a squash.
I love that.
I was like, this is my life now. I roast squashes at 6 a.m.
Why not? Right? Like,
yeah.
Maybe there's something gastronomical, you know, going on there. Like, maybe the squash is just like just ready at 6 a.m. it's the prime time.
I feel like, you know what it is? I feel the spirit within me of like one of those like old ethnic grandmothers who like wakes up and like, you know, the matriarch. She's like waking up to make the thing.
Yeah.
That's the vibe I'm trying to reproduce with my squash cooking.
Absolutely. So what is, what's your relationship to Lent look like, you know, since this episode is coming out during Lent? Have you experienced Lent and, you know, what kinds of practices have you done or are you undertaking for Lent?
That is such a good question. I have, like many things in religion, in my faith, a complicated relationship with Lent.
Absolutely.
In the sense of, of course, what else? You know, growing up, I loved Lent. I loved Lent, like a little church dork. I just loved it with all of my soul. And the Orthodox Church has a service like 6 times a week. And my church growing up had a service, I think 5 or 6 times a week for Lent. And I'd go to all of them because they were all so beautiful. And I loved it. Was I good at fasting? No. I was not good at fasting. The Orthodox Church fasts vegan.
Oh, yeah. That's true, yeah.
Yeah, so I was not very good at that because I really love cheese. But I really love cheese. But I love the practice of fasting and the practice of saying people fast for all sorts of varieties of reasons. And I find every year I kind of am in a different soul space when it comes to Lent. But I love this idea of fasting as a way to create space.
Yeah.
As a way to open up some space and see what God might do with it when I release my grip on certain attachments. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, Lent for me every year is a journey, and it certainly is a different journey now that I've shifted kind of my faith practice so dramatically. And so I think I'm still working it out. I'm still working out what Lent is for me this year. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, I find every year is different in terms of what it's for, but I do love this intentional season of like digging in to prayer and seeing where I can clean in my life, not cleaning in this like ugh, pure way, but cleaning in like spring cleaning, yeah. what can I dust off in my spirit and look at anew.
Yeah, I mean, it's always like a really great opportunity for that kind of like a spiritual tune-up, reset, you know. So I mean, like for this coming year, my partner Chad and I we wrote a Lent devotional together with some of our friends. It's called To Build and to Plant. And it will be available by the time this episode is released. And the theme of this devotional is we wanted to come at it from this place of, you know, thinking about Lent this year within the context of the past year, 2020, and thinking about like, how can we use this time to focus on the areas of our life in which we need renewal and restoration, and how do we prepare to enter into that restoration that comes at Easter, right? Mm. You know, because I think certainly for me, I don't know if, you know, this was your experience growing up, but Lent was always kind of put in these terms of like this time of cleaning in the sense that you were like cleaning in the other way, in terms of like, you know, you're a bad person, you're horrible, sinful, et cetera, et cetera. You need to mm-hmm. like get rid of all of your sins, right? And like, you know, I still feel like Lent is a penitential season, but I think with this devotional, we wanted to come at that, have that focus in a different way. All of that is to say, what are some of the ways in which you're noticing renewal or restoration in your life? Or are there places where you feel like you're wanting to, you know, kind of engender that?
That is so beautiful. What a beautiful thought. I'm reminded kind of I read somewhere that some folks give up self-judgment for Lent.
Mm, wow. Yeah.
Yes.
That's fucking hard.
Are you do you do Enneagram?
I do.
What are you?
I'm a one on the Enneagram.
How did I know you were a one?
I should stress it out. Yeah,
yes. But anyway, that's just a little aside. I find for me what is speaking to me right now is really kind of reviving my relationship to prayer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, because growing up, a lot of the prayers that the Orthodox Church gives, I prayed in the context of trigger warning, trying to pray the gateway. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of those prayers and a lot of those words and those sentiments are tainted for me and are triggering for me.
Yeah.
But I love to pray. I do. And so for me, one of the things that I find is slowly, you know, grass is slowly growing in the ashes, is like finding new language and new ways to talk to God that feel light and unburdened and fresh.
Mm. Wow. Mm. Yeah. And I mean, you know, it's like, I think as our life changes and shifts, like our prayer life also has to change, right? Like, you know, if we are praying in the same ways all the time, like our prayer life can get stuck. And I think also, you know, as you were saying, like when you have such a big shift in your context in your life, like that also demands a shift in that language.
Mm-hmm.
For sure. Like
It makes me think a lot of when you travel with a friend, you know, and you learn facets of your friendship that you didn't know about, the context that you're always in. And I sometimes feel like my journey with God is very that of like, we're doing some tourism right now. We're I am getting to know you in another place, and it's an adventure.
You're like, wow, God, I didn't know that you liked bluegrass music.
Yes, exactly. Yes.
It's so interesting. Yeah, I had a moment the other day where my partner sent me some bluegrass music. That's why it's on my mind. I was just like, I didn't know that you liked bluegrass music, but I mean, this is great. I love these songs.
Yes. Yes, exactly. One of the exciting things about shifting your faith path is you're learning a new language. How exciting.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And you're continuing to grow and, you know, kind of widen your understanding of how God is working in your life too. You know, like, I think so many of us are also raised with these ideas that, you know, God acts in these very like big, you know, earth shattering ways. You know, and something that I come back to is that, you know, I feel like has accompanied, you know, my own personal shifts in my faith life is like the story of Elijah, you know, looking out for God and not seeing or hearing God in the fire or in the earthquake or anything, but in that still small voice, you know, and it's like, as your prayer life changes, you also begin to notice like, oh, like God is actually speaking to me in these like very subtle ways that maybe I didn't, you know, pay attention to or wasn't able to hear before.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. It's, yeah. And that's the other thing I find with, I guess, Lent, but also just this journey I'm on of, I started a meditation practice just like a little while ago. And it's funny because I was raised to think that meditation is very evil, but creating that space, like learning to cultivate that space to be present and to pay attention moment by moment to everything that's arising, you realize like everything is prayer.
Yeah.
You know, like doing the laundry is prayer. And you know, cleaning my house is prayer, seeing God, not in these necessarily all these big movements like you're saying, but just in like the moment by moment acts of life.
Yeah.
It's very liberating, I find.
So last thing that I wanted to ask you that I've gotten into the habit of asking all my guests is if there's something that you would like to pass on to other folks who are listening to this show, other queer or trans people of color, what would that be? You know, like a piece of advice or, you know, something that inspires you and keeps you going in your faith life.
There's this one poem that kept me going all these years, and I find I'm never done with it. And it's a little quote by Rainer Maria Rilke, and it goes, "Be patient toward all that is unsolved in your heart, and try to love the questions themselves, like locked rooms and like books that are now written in a very foreign tongue. Do not seek the answers which cannot be given to you because you would not be able to live them. And the point is to live everything. Live the questions now, and perhaps you will then, gradually, without noticing it, live along some distant day into the answer."
I love that poem so much. It's been years since I heard it actually, but yeah. It's just so powerful to, you know, be able to hold all of those questions and not seek to, you know, answer everything at once.
Mm-hmm. And trust that if you are a person of faith, like, the Spirit is guiding you, and you're not on your own, and there is a rhythm to these things, and over time those answers, they're coming. Mm-hmm. They're on their way to you.
Yeah. Ah, so beautiful. Well, friend, thank you so much for being with me. This was great. Is there anything that you want to promote, or like, if you want to share your social media, you can feel free to do that. Otherwise, you know, that's okay too.
Oh, fun. I wish I had something to promote. Anyone who would like to can follow me on Instagram, where I share lots of memes and poems. Yeah. It's mar._unfiltered.
Mm. Oh, well, thank you.
Thank you, my friend. It's been an honor.
Friends, thank you for tuning into this week's episode of Fruits of the Spirit with my friend, Maria Facudi. I hope you enjoyed it. If you'd like to connect with Maria, you can find her on Instagram at mar._unfiltered. And we'll put that in the show notes so that you can see it in text. You can follow the show on social media. We're on Instagram and Twitter at FOTS Podcast. That's FOTS Podcast. As well as on Facebook at Fruits of the Spirit Podcast. If you love the show, please be sure to share it with your community and help us spread the word. If you'd like to support the work of the show financially, there are two ways that you can do that. I have a Patreon page at patreon.com/themologian. And if you become a patron today, you not only support the work of this podcast, but my other online ministries such as devotional writing and videos. And you also get access to our free, and you also get access to our bonus episode feed, which is called Second Helping. That is available to all patrons, regardless of how much you pledge a month. And it includes special little bonus content, some conversations that may not have made it into the main episode, or meditations or sermons that I've written. So if you're interested in that, be sure to become a patron. If you'd like to just support this show, you can also go to our Anchor page at anchor.fm/FOTS Podcast, or you can set up a monthly recurring donation. Lastly, if you know of a queer or trans person of color who you think would be a great guest for the show, please recommend them by sending an email to FOTSpodcast@gmail.com. Share a little bit of their story with me and how I can get in contact with them, and I will reach out. Until next time, friends, please stay safe, stay healthy, and stay fruity. Bye now.